Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to an exciting and informative edition of Atlanta Business Radio. This is a special spotlight episode that we've been doing from time to time here in the studios called Atlanta's Most Trusted Advisors. I'm Ryan Redhawk McPherson, and as always, alongside me is the co-host, Bonnie Buell Rosick. How are you, Bonnie?
I'm doing great. How are you, Ryan?
Very, very well. What's new with you?
Oh, I am trying like everyone else to get through this hot and muggy summer.
It has been that, yes.
Yeah, it's been busy. We tend to be very busy in the summertime because we work with so many CPAs who are very busy in the spring.
Right.
And in the summertime, they're like, oh, we should think about marketing for next year.
Do you find that because we're, you know, kind of people are planning for next year already?
Yep.
So they come to see you for their marketing needs and kind of give a master strategy plan together for their marketing.
That's what we like to do.
That's good. Well, let's remind our listeners right off the top how they can get in touch with you and BBR Marketing.
Sure. Our website is bbrmarketing.com, and you can email me at bonnie@bbrmarketing.com, and we would love to talk to anybody.
Definitely. And make sure you're connected with them on social media as well as us. We're on Twitter. You can follow the network Business Radio X at Business Radio X. And you can follow today's show, Atlanta Business Radio, on Twitter, Atlanta BIZ Radio. That's Atlanta BIZ Radio. All right. Without further ado, let's introduce today's interview. That's going to be Colin E. Blaylock. How are you, sir?
I'm wonderful.
All right. And you're a shareholder with Jones & Cobb CPA, right?
That's correct. In Atlanta.
In Atlanta. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got involved over there.
Well, I was born and raised in Atlanta. And the main reason I got into accounting is I was talking with my brother. I said, you know, you can major in accounting, you can go into management, you can sell real estate, you can sell insurance, but you can't major in insurance and be an accountant. So you specialize, and then you can go do whatever you want to. Mm. After I took my first two courses, I sold my books. I said, there's no way in the world I'm going to do that for a living.
All right.
My spring of my junior year, I said, I think I am going to be an accountant. And I went back in and got my accounting degree at Georgia State and came out, went to work for a CPA firm, hated doing auditing, just didn't like the financial auditing. Mm-hmm. I liked the tax part of it. And I tried to go into the tax department, and they said, well, you know, you're making us money. Clients like you, we'd like for you to stay. And that was great for them, but I wasn't happy. And I started looking around, and at that time, everybody wanted you to prove yourself in audit and flip into tax. And I went home and I told my wife, I said, I got a problem. I said, if I go to another firm and I do a good job, I'm afraid they're going to keep me in auditing. If I do a bad job, they're going to fire me.
Yeah.
So we were at a holiday party, and one of her co-teacher's husband was an IRS agent. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, if you want to learn taxes, great place to learn taxes. He said, I'm not going to retire here, but I'm learning a lot. So I went to work for the Internal Revenue Service.
Okay.
And I had a ball. If they paid a commission, I'd still be there. There's not a tax return out there you can't change, but there's a lot of returns that should be changed. Mm-hmm. And so I was there not that long, but I had gotten up through group manager. I was training revenue agents, and they wanted me to move for a $1,200 raise. And interest rates were about 12%. I said, where would I go? They said, somewhere in the Southeast. I said, how long? They said, 18 to 24 months. I said, then where would I go? Mm-hmm. I said, we don't know. I said, could it be Cleveland, Ohio?
Yeah.
Newark, New Jersey. And they said, yeah. I said, how about Fargo, North Dakota? They said, sure. Well, my father-in-law is from Fargo, and he said he wouldn't go there if they put a gun in his back. So at that time, I took off the black hat, put on a white hat, and now I'm doing the same thing, but I'm doing it on the taxpayer side.
I see. And so along the way, you found yourself at another crossroads, maybe learning opportunities, and you began to become an expert in body language. Is that right?
Well, I hate to call it an expert
because
an ex is a has-been, a spurt's a large amount of gas under pressure, but I'm not going to go there.
Okay.
But it was tax season. My wife had gotten a gift certificate to Barnes & Noble, and I was looking at the sale books. And I was looking for something for escapism. I didn't want to read a novel because I didn't want to have to keep up with who was killing who or what was going on. And I saw this book, and it was called The Secret Language of Success, Getting What You Want. And I opened it up, and I said, that's pretty interesting. And I turned a few more pages. That was really interesting. I bought it for $4.98 mm-hmm. on sale. Went home, started reading it. The next day I went in, and within about 5 seconds, I said, I saw that. I know what you're doing. I did not tell anybody in my firm I was reading this book, and I would limit myself to 20 pages every night. But that was my escape.
Why would you do that?
I didn't want to get all the way through. I wanted escape. Yeah. And I would, the secret language of success has 31 rules, and accountants love rules.
Okay. And numbers. And so numbers. There you go.
Absolutely. I had them both. So I would read those, you know, 3 or 4 rules, and I'd go in the next day and say, okay, how many of those did I see today? And I was absolutely fascinated. After that, I started talking to the other CPAs, and CPAs are not known for their body language reading or mm-hmm. their personality, for mm-hmm. that matter. I tell people accountants are not really boring people. We just get really excited about boring topics.
Right.
And, you know, that's a good way to put it.
I mean, that's where we are. So I read a couple more books, and I started doing presentations. And the more I did the presentations, the more it came to my mind what was happening. And I've now, on my 17th, 18th book, just about every one of them will have a nugget in it. And I've got a list of 4 or 5 that I'm going to tell people that they should or look at. But it is absolutely fascinating. The people that are successful do it anyway.
Unnaturally or naturally?
Naturally.
Yeah.
You just don't know you're doing it.
Right.
People pay attention to 7% of what you say,
mm-hmm.
38% of how you say it. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
It's the same thing as thanks a lot.
Right.
Same word.
But the tone.
The tone.
Mm-hmm.
That's 38%. Mm-hmm. 55% is your body language, and you don't know what you're doing.
So, yeah. And even the other person receiving that body language still may even not know that they're interpreting it, you know, consciously, or using that to, you know, affirm a thought or to, you know, relate to someone else.
Exactly. When was the last time that you met somebody, they said the right words, they smiled, and you walked away and said, you know what, I just don't feel right with that guy. Yeah. He gives me the, mm-hmm. you know, that's, right. you're reading the body language.
Right.
Will Rogers said it best, never miss a good chance to shut up. Just look at the body language. Look at what somebody's telling you. You'll be absolutely amazed.
Yes, it definitely makes a difference.
So it's almost kind of like what we, women in particular, will call that gut feeling. You know, without realizing exactly what it is that's giving us that gut feeling, it's really the body language that's doing it, and we're just interpreting that as, yeah, that guy's mm-hmm. a little sleazy. I think right. we'll move on.
Exactly. Well, and it gets back into women look at a child, and they can see what's wrong very easily. They take in everything. They can take in all the emotions. The men, from a physical standpoint, are hunters. They focus. That's why I look in the refrigerator and I cannot see the ketchup. And I know there's not ketchup in there. And I'll turn around and say, do we have ketchup? Oh, yeah, it's right here. And it's somewhere there. I was just not focusing on it. Mm-hmm. It's the way you read. But ladies are much better initially at body language than men.
Very intuitive, for sure.
Exactly.
And so you began to read all these books. You began to develop your own theories, I guess, or your own insight into this. But you also wanted to help others kind of use this, both in the workplace or maybe in a social setting. And so, yeah, you know, so again, it's like that secret language that you're discovering on your own.
Absolutely. The more I looked at it, the more I looked at CPAs, we need to be able to communicate it. No matter how intelligent you are, how much you know, if somebody doesn't feel comfortable with what you're saying, if they can't understand it, and if you can't tell whether they understand it, mm-hmm. you have a problem. So I started doing that. I have spoken, I have a presentation that I developed. It takes anywhere from 75 minutes to 100 minutes, depending on how you want to do it, to go through the whole presentation. But I made it at a couple of the tax conferences for the Georgia Society of CPAs. Then I did it for Georgia State, Georgia Southern, University of West Georgia, Kennesaw State, and Georgia Tech.
That's great.
I couldn't remember them.
Right here around the metro area.
Yeah, and my comment to Bonnie earlier was, I wish somebody had done this for me 35, 40 years ago, I would probably be in the same place, mm-hmm. but I would have had a lot more fun.
Right.
And you probably would have avoided a thing or two that you stumbled into on the process, too, because by being able to see what, read this body language, you get down to motives and you get down to like what people really are feeling, even though they may be saying something completely different.
Right. And when you're sitting and talking with somebody and you get that uneasy feeling, this sort of helps you understand why you're getting that uneasy feeling.
Well, this leads us into another question. How about some good first steps one could take to begin to understand not only their own body language, but others they meet?
Well, one of the things I was going to do is tell people they should look for this book. And it's out of print. I went on Amazon.com last night. You can buy it for a penny.
Used.
Or new.
Oh, really?
If you can find it.
Okay.
But it's one penny. It costs you $4.24 to ship it.
Yeah.
If you have Amazon.Prime, they will only sell it to you for $4.95. So there's a minimum. I don't know why that is, but you know, for $4.24, you can get this book. That's the 31 Rules of Body Language, and it helps you understand what's going on and what's there. There is an excellent book called The Definitive Book of Body Language. It's by Barbara and Alan Pease. It's P-A-S-E. It discusses body language from beginning handshakes, where you stand, where you sit, and it brings out people all the way up through President Clinton, and it talks about George W. Bush, and it talks about how their body language can impact people. When I do my presentation, I ask, is there anybody in here that likes calculus? Very few people raise their hand, but when they do, I said, this is the book for you. It's called Telling Lies. It is by Paul Ekman. It's E-K-M-A-N. It is the hardest book I've ever tried to read in my life. Just terrible. But everybody else, all the other 18 books now that I'm in my 18th book, quotes him and his research. So he did phenomenal research. Several years ago, there was a TV program called Lie to Me. It was based on Paul Ekman's book. And it's how you can tell if somebody's lying to you, how you can tell if they are accepting what you are saying. And it's just absolutely fascinating.
That is fascinating, for sure. As body language is something we use every day to communicate, like I said, consciously or subconsciously, but there are people out there who are really dialed into it, like yourself. And so are there things that, like I said, give you away? That common body language mistakes that people make that you can easily tell that they are kind of unscrupulous or perhaps not telling the truth.
What Paul Ekman said it best, there's not one item that will say, aha, you're telling a lie. You have to benchmark people and you have to understand what their norm is so that you can understand where they are. But there are some ways that you can impress people and or have them open to what you're saying and how you're saying it. And that starts from the very first. Bonnie and I were sitting out there this morning, and I said, you know, when you came up, I said, you're a flasher.
Yeah, and I was like, what? Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
And then my first question was, can you get help?
yeah, right.
and the flash is the eyebrow flash. And when you see somebody and it's a friendly meeting, your eyebrows will flash up.
Up, okay.
And they will wrinkle.
Okay.
And if it's a friendly meeting from your end, you will flash. And you know that it's a friendly meeting. Here's the key, and this is what CPAs, and it doesn't matter whether you're a CPA, a businessman, a mom, a dad, a
truck
brother,
driver, right?
Truck Anything. Driver, anybody. If you will flash, you're letting people know it's a friendly call, but you have to flash at the right time. If you flash too early, they miss it. If you flash too late when you're within 3 or 4 feet, they say, wait a minute, did I spill something on my shirt or my pants unzipped?
Right. It relays or conveys another meaning behind it,
exactly,
depending on the timing of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So 6 to 10 feet away, you flash. And if it's a friendly call, you return the flash.
Okay.
The book I was telling you about, I had a meeting with a brand new client and I went walking out and he flashed. And I flashed back and I said, hey, this is a friendly meeting. And then there's several other things that, well, we can go right into it. You need to know whether you're dealing with an introvert or an extrovert. How can you tell?
I would imagine a lot of the CPAs fall into the introvert category.
Absolutely. But when the CPA is working with a client, is the client an introvert or is the client an extrovert? And it's important to know because you have to deal with them differently. For example, Well, I'll tell you the way I would look at it. I can tell whether you're an introvert or an extrovert once we meet, because we're going to walk up, we're going to flash, we're going to exchange glances or gazes, then we're going to break our eyes. And when you break your eyes, you're either going to look down to the left or down to the right.
Okay.
Okay? If you look down to the left, you're probably an extrovert. If you look down to your right, you're probably an introvert.
Okay.
That new meeting that I was telling you about with a client, when I went walking up, I flashed, he flashed. He broke looking down to the right. He's an introvert.
Is that it, like across the board? Because I feel like me, I'm an extrovert some of the time, most of the time, but other times I'm very much an introvert. I can kind of go back and forth a little bit.
That's mm-hmm. an excellent point. And basically what it is, there's something called an ambivert. And when you have to be, you can be an extrovert, but when you are in an unfamiliar place, you may be an introvert.
I think that's what I am.
Exactly.
I can kind of go one way or the other.
I would fall in that category too.
Yeah, a lot of people do, but you have to understand where you are. My guy may have ended up being an extrovert, but for that meeting, that moment in dealing with me, he was an introvert. Here's the problem, and here's why you need to know that. An introvert, you have to pull stuff out of them.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get them talking to understand where they're going. If he was an extrovert, I have to corral him back down. It's like herding cats. You got to get him back focused on what you're talking about. Just by the way he broke his eyes, I can tell whether he's an introvert or an extrovert.
Right.
There's an easy way to do this, and people are listening. You can do this at home, and I'm going to get you two to do it here.
Okay.
Hold your hands straight out in front of you. Look straight ahead.
Palms up.
Palms up. Look straight ahead. Now look at your left hand and look down at your right hand. Don't turn your head. Just cut with your eyes. One way will feel comfortable. One way does not feel comfortable.
I feel more comfortable looking at my right hand.
You're an introvert. And you force yourself to be an extrovert. But you are really, I'm sure there's exceptions.
Yes,
but
right.
For the most part, that's where you are.
Right.
It hurts when I look to my right.
It does.
It's very comfortable to look to my left.
Okay.
I'm an extrovert.
Naturally. You're born that way, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're forced to be an extrovert from a business standpoint. But if you know where you are and you know what you're doing, you know what you're relaying to somebody else.
So Bonnie, we've revealed you're an introvert.
Well, what's funny is I test as a high extrovert. So that actually makes me wonder, like, is that where the truth lies?
Yes.
And it's probably somewhere in the middle. And I am one of those people that can, be very extroverted at times, but also very introverted at times. So it's kind of probably.
But again, you may be the ambivert first.
Yeah.
And you're a natural leader. You're the lead of an organization, a group of people. You motivate others, inspire others. So I think that would lean you to the extrovert camp as well.
Side, like Myers-Briggs and those kind of things, always extrovert. Which one? Which way did you lean, or was it about the same?
About the same.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel uncomfortable or more comfortable looking at my hands either way. So I feel like I've always been an extrovert, and I've had to corral my kind of energy through the years. But there's plenty of times, I was in the Army for a long time. And when you have a good leader and a poor leader, despite the rank on their shirt or their hat, you can tell by the way their shoulders are square or how they're looking at you or communicating to you whether you want to follow them or not. Right. And so I think I've kind of picked up a little of that through the years as well, and then implemented that in the civilian world and how you can tell someone is a natural leader or you want to follow them.
Well, that's what we were saying earlier. A lot of people that have not read the books, they've learned it through experience.
Mm-hmm.
And you find out experience is a very tough teacher because they give you the test first, then the lessons.
Yeah.
But you understand over a period of time how to do things. There's another book called The Silent Language of Leaders. And if you have to deal with a board or a group of people, that is probably one of the best books you can read. It's by Carol Kinsey Goman, G-O-M-A-N.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful. I read that book the year before I became chair of the Georgia Society of CPAs. 14 people on the board, all of them high energy people, all of them leaders, no Braves, all Chiefs. And we had to address some very tough issues.
Yeah.
And I could sit in that meeting with information I got gathered or gleaned from this book and say, that person's on board, that person has a problem, that person has a more serious problem, and keep people engaged until we work it out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sometimes it's scary, sometimes it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, very revealing, I imagine.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, those listeners who may have just joined us, we're talking with Colin Blaylock. He's with Jones & Cobb CPA, but he's also teaching us about body language. And it's not what you say that is heard. It's the body language that is the key. So let's go beyond the hands, the eyes, the face, and then the rest of the body. How does that play? The shoulders, even all the way down to the feet, are important to understand someone.
Actually, the feet are some of the most important when we get there.
Yeah.
From a head and shoulders, it's one of those things. You can tell if somebody's dejected. You can tell if they're sad. You can tell if they're not confident on what they're doing by their posture. Mm-hmm. The more you have straight back posture, mm-hmm. the better off you're going to be. There are 8 different handshakes. Each handshake means something. And you can tell where somebody's going just by, or to start with, the handshake. Some of them you don't do on a first meeting. Some of them you definitely do on a first meeting. Mm. And depending on what the status is and where you are, you use the handshake. For example, the normal business handshake, straight ahead, thumb into thumb, you pump about 2 or 3 times and you're done.
Mm-hmm.
That's the normal business handshake. If somebody comes and they put their palm down so that you have to do your palm up, they're being dominant.
Mm-hmm. I see, right?
They're dominating you. And they're saying, I'm more powerful, I'm in a better position than you are.
Right.
All right. Now, I can't do this on radio, but there's some counteractions that you can do. But if you know somebody's dominant, then you know where they're going and what they're trying to do. The reverse of that is, if they've done with their palm up, that's called a submissive. They're letting the other person be dominant.
Mm-hmm.
Give you a great example when you use that. I have somebody that comes to me and the IRS is giving them a hard time, just beating them about the head and the body. We're not in this together. It's not the regular business. They don't need me to dominate them. They need me to help them. I'm there to serve. And just by giving them my hand in a submissive standpoint, they understand that I'm not trying to roughshod them. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to help.
It's like a dog rolling over on their belly.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, and I ask people, who uses that handshake? Well, a lot of bankers do.
Because you're earning trust, I guess, that way in a lot of ways.
And you're there to serve them. You're there to help them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Ministers, rabbis, they hold their hand in the submissive position. The other handshakes are, and the one that you normally don't want to do, is the glove, where you put your hand on each side.
Right, the double handshake.
The double handshake. Yeah. On a first meeting, that's very, very, very negative. And I ask people, who does that? Normally, people say politicians.
I was going to say.
I was going to say politicians.
They're trying to convey more of an affirm, you know, to you.
First meeting, and they're saying, hey, we're in this together, and I'm all there with you. Another one that does it is a mortician. I was doing a presentation. I had about 200 people in this room, and I said that, and everybody looked at this one gentleman on the other side of the room. I had no idea he was a mortician. So we took a break, and he came up. He said, you know what? You're absolutely right. I said, well, what I would do is the first time you meet them, I would do the submissive. You're there to serve.
Mm-hmm.
That night, when it's emotional and it's not the first meeting, you do the glove and you say,
or maybe
anything,
saying goodbye.
Yeah, exactly. Anything I can do to help you, let me know. He looked at me and he said, you know what? That's what they taught us in mortician school. I did not remember it.
And it came back to
them. And it came back.
That makes complete sense.
It makes sense when you do it. There are a couple of other handshakes. One is the dead fish, and I love to do this in person. When somebody, I get people to come up in my presentation, and I give them a dead fish just to see how they react.
Right.
What do you do with a dead fish?
You recoil from it. Generally.
Yeah, it kind of repels you a little.
You want to wipe your hand off and walk away and say, yuck. And I have a picture of a dead fish. I said, now, if you want to have some fun, go to a Kroger or a Publix and say, I'd like to take a picture of a dead fish. Because they thought I was from 60 Minutes or Undercover Alive or something, saying, look at all the germs I'm exposing this. I had to show the guy my whole presentation. I had to show him the dead fish handshake. Then he let me take the picture. What I tell people to do is, if you get a dead fish, you can't do anything about it that moment. But later, when you know you're going to leave, you know you're going to get another dead fish. Take your other hand and don't do a glove, but help place it into the palm of your hand.
I see.
Give a decent handshake and then get out of there.
So like grab their wrist a little bit or forearm a little bit, pull them in, then do a firm handshake and then be...
Exactly. And then you're gone.
Right.
A couple of other shakes, if you haven't seen somebody for a while and they're a friend, you'll shake their hand and you'll do a double touch. You either hit them on the elbow, hit them on the forearm. If they're really good friends, you'll shake their hands and pop their shoulder. Mm-hmm. That's where ladies hug. Mm-hmm. But on the first meeting, you don't come up and hug. You know,
most of the time.
Most of the time, yeah. Well, if
I'm kind of a hugger, so
that's an extrovert coming out. I can see that. I can see that.
Yeah.
But you know that's just some of the things that you need to be aware of.
Certainly.
What you are telling people just by the way you're shaking hands.
Yeah.
Well, and that we were talking about the politicians earlier. I also see, and I think you mentioned Bill Clinton earlier. I think I've seen this before, where he shakes hands and they grab the elbow of the hand you're shaking, almost
right.
Like where it's, what is that communicating?
Normally, if they do that, they normally know the person.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's, especially if it's the first meeting, you don't do that. But if it's the second meeting, when you touch them on the forearm or on the elbow,
so
it's just the connection.
Okay.
While we're talking about elbows, if you want to have really good service in a restaurant, when the server comes up, when you're talking to them, placing your order, just touch their elbow. Don't grab it. Just touch the elbow. Making that physical contact makes the experience much more personal for the server, and you get much better service.
Mm-hmm. Just the elbow. Don't touch anything else.
Just the elbow. Yeah. Just the elbow. Well, two stories on that. One, I had a group come into Atlanta. There was an attorney from Atlanta and myself. We had 36 people. The attorney made the reservations for dinner. She had a business meeting come up. She was not able to come, so poof, I was the host.
Mm-hmm.
We showed up at the restaurant. Her assistant forgot to call and confirm the meeting, and the maitre d' said, we don't have room.
Yeah.
We can't do that. So I asked for the manager, and he came up, and we were talking. And I touched his elbow, and I was explaining to him what we were doing. He said, well, give me a minute. And in about 8 or 10 minutes, he had the table set up. He served 36 people. We had 4 servers. We had the best time we've ever had as a group. And it was just with a personal contact.
You attribute all that to the touch
Absolutely.
On the elbow.
Absolutely.
Right.
I did this presentation at Georgia State, and this one young lady walked up, and she said, I'm a server. She said, and I make more tips than anybody in my restaurant, and nobody knows why. She said, I didn't either, but now I know. She said, my grandmother told me that somewhere in the mill, walk up to the people and just slightly touch them on their shoulder and say, is there anything I can do? Is everything okay? Just the personal touch. She said, I make 25% more than anybody else. I said, well, are you going to go back and tell people? She said,
No.
Not on your life.
She had natural people skills, just good soft skills that go out there, and she didn't know why she was making more tips.
Right.
That's it. Very, very insightful for sure. So reach out and touch someone, ladies and gentlemen. Touch them on the elbow to let them know that you're there to help them and support them, whether you're being served or you're serving.
Right.
You just gave a great example of both sides of that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And yes. So,
tell us about the feet. You're teasing that earlier.
Yeah.
Well, a couple of things. I'll give you a simple example and then one that's a little bit better. Somebody comes walking past your office and you're sitting at your desk and you look up and their feet are going down the hall and they've turned their body.
Mm-hmm.
And they look and say, Ryan, I need to talk to you about something. Well, they do, but not now. They're not interested in doing it right then. They're just putting you on notice. They need to talk. If they're standing there with both feet facing you, they're talking about now.
Okay.
So is it putting you on notice, just something we need to do, no rush,
right.
Or is it something, hey, we need to sit down and talk?
So if they turn to face you and feet square to you, shoulder square, eyes looking at you, I need you now.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Now, let's take this into a business setting. You're at a conference, and you see two people you want to meet, and you start walking up to them, and they both turn their torso and say, hi, how are you, and da-da-da-da, but their feet stay pointing to each other.
Mm.
You're not part of that conversation. They don't want you to be part of that conversation. Go do something else. Come back later. If they want you to be part of the conversation, they will take their foot and step open so that you have a triangle so that they are facing both people. Then you're welcome to come in the group.
Yes.
So just by looking where their feet are.
Yeah.
I tell another key point. The distance that you stay away from people, it depends on what level of familiarity you have, what level of discussion you're going to have. If it's a personal relationship, they're going to be 8 to 10 inches away from you. That's personal. If they're 12 inches, it's private. As you move out, it gets a little bit better. Social is 4 to 12 feet. If you will watch a group, the group will be about 4 feet apart. Mm-hmm. And if it gets so big that they're more than 4 or 12 feet, it will splinter and become two more groups just because people feel comfortable. There's a difference in where you are. And I make sure people understand I'm talking about U.S. customs.
That's right.
Oh,
internationally, there's some other rules apply for sure.
Absolutely. Well, in Europe, much like New York City, there are so many people that their regular space is 12 inches.
Yeah.
And I tell people that it's called a European waltz. You get somebody from down here talking to somebody from Europe or New York, and they're in your face, yeah. And you move, and they move. You yeah. move, and
like,
they move.
Like, get out of my business.
Yeah, and then they got you back to another corner, and they're right there. And all you want is space.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But they feel comfortable. You know why yeah. you don't see people's face in the elevator? You're in the personal space.
Yeah, people usually, you know, pretty reserved and kind of in their own little silo when on an elevator.
Leave me alone.
Right.
If you want to see their face, if you want to see their eyes,
right.
stand with your back to the door, look back at them because they're looking up to see what floor they're on so they can get out.
Yeah. Or if you want to make someone really uncomfortable in the elevator and you're the only other person on there, go stand right next to them and see what they do. And they'll look at you like you're pretty weird.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And that's the public space, 12 to 15 feet. When you're walking down the street, you want to know what's around you,
mm-hmm.
and you're not going to walk right beside somebody in step with them unless you're with them, if you can keep from it.
Right.
There's a difference between space in Atlanta, New York, Helena, Montana. In New York, you're nose to nose. One of my shareholders just got back from a trip to New York with her family. She said, I've never seen so many people in my life. And it was 12 o'clock at night at Times Square.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
People everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Here, we have pretty good space and we shake hands. In Montana, you're more apt to wave at somebody.
From across the street,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Then to shake hands, there's not anybody there.
Yeah.
You know, I saw more people my first day into the office when I came back from a trip to Montana. I saw it a week in Montana.
Yeah.
But you have to relate where you are and what makes sense for you.
And I would imagine read that other person too and their comfort level,
you know,
and adjust yours accordingly. You know, if you're really trying to create a relationship or create a comfort level with that person, you know what? You kind of have to let go of yours a little bit sometimes if you're with a New Yorker or something.
Exactly.
You know, okay, I'll live with this close talking.
Exactly. Well, that's because they're used to it.
Yeah.
And they're comfortable. And if they're comfortable and you understand it, you're okay. If you don't understand it, you get this weird feeling. You know, give me some space.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was a guy that moved around a lot as a kid, like, so I was in the Army a lot. And so I know I assimilate to just about every environment I go into. If it's quiet and reserved, I can be loud, and that's kind of my natural sense, but I'll go down and be a little more reserved,
right.
and kind of assimilate to the body language, the tone, just the overall, you know, kind of feeling of a group or a situation I'm in. And if that situation's high energy, then I can, you know, ramp it up as well. I think a lot of this would come into great play for hiring managers, you know, HR departments, that sort of thing, so they can begin to understand not only the people they bring on staff, but their own staff even more closely.
Well, and I think they do a really good job at that, and people that are in HR, through their experience, they pick that up. And when they do the interview, they're not only looking at what you say, it's how you say it, how you make contact, are you confident, are you able to discuss things in a proper and professional manner. So all of that applies. I tell people there's a neat game you can play.
Okay.
The next time you're sitting around with a group of guys, Ryan, take your right hand and put it in your pocket.
Okay.
Just put it in the pocket. Within about 2 or 3 minutes, you're going to have 2 or 3 other guys with their hand in the pocket.
Yeah. I can think about this already, and I probably have seen it happen, especially in the Army.
Exactly. Oh, absolutely. I love to go to holiday parties, and I'll walk up to the table where the food is, and I'll lean on the table and nibble and talk to people as they come up. Within about 4 minutes, I'll have 3 or 4 people leaning on the table. And I walk off and say, God, I can't believe that really works.
Yeah.
But it really works.
So other people are subconsciously looking for clues to follow, it
right.
sounds like.
If it is a positive meeting, they will mirror your actions.
Yes.
Ladies don't normally have the jeans pocket. What they normally do is either put their left foot forward or their right foot forward. Well, whichever one they put forward, the other people will put forward.
Mm-hmm.
It is, I tell people that you can do that for fun. Now, let's talk about doing it for profit.
Right.
You're in a meeting, and the person gets to a serious point, and he leans in. You should lean in. If he leans back, you should lean back. If you stay leaning in, it may make him uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. If he puts his right hand on the table, you put your right hand on the table. If he crosses his leg, it's Simon Says.
Match and mirror.
You're mirroring.
Yes.
Now, that's sort of bad to say, hey, you should do that, but yes. let's look at it from a true standpoint. If he's saying something important and it's important enough that he's leaning in, you should lean in to make sure you understand it. If he's comfortable enough to lean back, you don't want to keep him on edge. You lean back. Mm-hmm. So it is really helping that individual feel comfortable communicating with you.
But if I'm consciously always making decisions based on the other person's actions, then I'm losing a little bit of my own kind of leadership position or authoritative position, wouldn't I?
Well, again, it depends on where you are and what you're trying to do.
I kind of just want it to all happen naturally. I don't want to have to be so like, okay, I got to move my hand here now. Now I need to move my other hand. Oh, lean back now. You know, it seems a little calculated.
Yeah. Well, and I was going to say the same thing, only like if I were the one speaking and I suddenly noticed that it would feel like someone is mimicking me mm-hmm. as opposed to trying to make the communication go more smoothly, especially if it's that calculated.
Yeah. So I guess there's a little art to it, I suppose.
I guess.
It is more of an art. I'm not saying do Simon Says, and you're absolutely right. That will make it, it gives you the wrong impression. Mm-hmm. At the same time, if somebody is leaning forward to say something important, you need to lean forward.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and if you're still leaning forward and they lean back, then that's almost saying, hey, I'm expecting him to say something else. And the guy may not be wanting to say anything else. So it is a professionalism that is not immediate. It's just you need to know what's happening.
Well, I've always been told I'm very expressive with my body language, my facial expressions, that when bad news comes my way, you can see it. You know, I get dejected, but you know, I fight constantly to not let that be that way. Right. You know, with poker face, I guess they should say. So when I am in it, like a deal making situation or an instructor position, that doesn't give away, you know, my position. So, yeah. So what's next for you? Are you going to read some more books? Are you going on some more speaking tours? What's next?
Well, I have just done this presentation 4 times this year so far. I went to the North Carolina Association of CPAs, did a group with 445 CPAs.
Wow.
And got some really nice feedback and some people were really pleased with what we were doing. I'm going to be doing it for a couple of colleges. And that's one of the things I've done a lot. I wish somebody taught me this, like I said, a long, long, long time ago. And if I can help a student understand what he's conveying, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Give you another example. All the instructors tell you, look them in the eye and let them know that you want the job. And that is absolutely right. But I will tell you, and I tell the students, don't stare.
Right.
Break your eyes. Don't keep looking at me. Because if you're just staring at me, there is no way in the world I want to work with you on a daily basis. You know, blink. Let me know that something's there. Right. That, you know, is just something that you do want to make eye contact, but, and you do want to break your eyes looking down. I have a PowerPoint that we have on this, and the young lady that did the PowerPoint does a wonderful job for me, and I did it all by hand. I went walking out, and I said, Jody, you having any trouble with it? She said, well, I was going to ask you one question, and she cut her eyes to the side. I said, what's wrong? She said, did it work? I said, did what work? She was on that slide. If you want to take somebody out of their conversation, doesn't matter whether they are talking or you're talking, cut your eyes to the left or the right. Just look like you're looking behind you. It will take them out of their conversation. They'll say, what's wrong? What's gaining on me? What's happening?
Right.
If you want to take them completely out of their concept, break your eyes looking up. When you look up, you say, oh, I can't believe you're
saying it. Kind of rolling your eyes.
Yeah. Like you're rolling your eyes. And that just destroys a meeting. Now, do you want to do that? Well, it depends. Talk about negotiation. Mm-hmm. I was in an IRS audit. We were talking about a very technical issue. The guy had a great point. But he started this staring contest with me, which you don't want to do. But I started staring with him for about 3 or 4 seconds, and I just cut my eyes looking up like, I can't believe you're that dumb. It took him completely out of his thought process.
Right.
Later, he dropped the issue. He had a great issue. And he just dropped it. It was all because of the eyes.
Yeah, for sure. And in the Army, again, 3-second rule, they said. Yep. Saw a female soldier, you're only allowed to look for 3 seconds. Any more than that, it could be considered sexual
exactly.
harassment.
Exactly.
So that similar wow. in business yeah. or, yeah. you know, when meeting someone, just don't stare. Right?
Exactly.
It can make someone uncomfortable.
A couple of other things. One is the smile. If you're in a meeting and you smile, that can be great and it can help the communication. If you do it at the right time in the right place.
Yeah.
If you do it at the wrong time, if they're telling you something really serious and you're smiling, wrong connection. Mm-hmm. If you, I tell people, when you're in a group and they ask a question and you don't know the answer, you know what most people do? They smile. That's a great question, but don't ask me.
Yeah.
Right? Just don't ask
deflect,
me.
Deflect. Deflect.
Move on.
Yeah, move on. Move on. Absolutely. That's it. Another good example is you have a teenager that needs to have some counseling and you're sitting there talking to them and you think you're making a great point and all of a sudden they break out with that little smile. What you'd really like to do is take a 2x4, pop them upside yeah. the head. When they woke up, the smile would be gone. They'd be listening and yeah. you'd be okay. But I did that. I was doing the presentation at Georgia State. I had a young man come up to me afterwards. He said, "You're a golfer, aren't you?" I said, "Yeah, how did you know?" He said, "You rolled your wrist when you started talking about knocking the kid off the stool." I said, "You're going to be really good at this."
So he was picking up on little clues that you didn't yeah, even know you were giving away.
Exactly. That I did not even know I was doing.
Training the trainer.
A protege.
Over there. Yeah.
I said, "That's excellent." That was absolutely
good clues.
Ball.
Yeah. For sure.
But you know, there are things like that you need to be aware of. The eyes. When you tell a lie, your eyes dilate. Mm-hmm. I never could understand why I couldn't play poker very well. And I think I must be very expressive.
Yeah.
And my eyes expand. How do they know that? Well, they did studies.
Yeah.
And they had some really good poker players that played professional poker players. And the professional poker players beat them like 87, 88% of the time. They put dark shades on the really good poker players. It dropped like 82% just by taking the eyes
out of the equation.
And that's why they're frequently wearing sunglasses
exactly.
when you watch those poker tournaments.
They don't move their lips, their eyes,
yeah.
and nothing. They sit like they're like robots.
I think yeah. I have an advantage on that because I have really, really dark brown eyes
yeah.
and you can't see my
yeah.
pupils.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
you'd be a good poker
right.
player, Bonnie. Yeah.
Next step, we'll play poker.
All right. This is all fascinating
yeah,
stuff for
really
sure.
Is.
And we encourage others to get those books that he recommended out there. Incorporate this into your business world, in your negotiations, when you're hiring people, when you're looking to do business with others. I think all of this can be applied for sure. So any last minute thoughts from you, Colin, and how can people get in touch with you if they yeah. want to learn more?
Okay. Well, a couple of things. One, if you are single or if you have single kids or whatever, there is a book called Let Me See Your Body Talk.
Isn't that a song by Olivia Newton-John?
I think so.
Body Talk.
Be.
Let me see your...
Yeah, it is.
It's Jan,
showing your age there,
yeah.
Ryan.
It's Jan Hargrave, Hargrave. And it is absolutely enthralling, mm-hmm. I guess.
I heard her speak, actually, at a conference a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And that was part of why I wanted to actually do this show. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but no. One of the things that she pointed out that sounded ridiculous to me is as a woman, you can tell if a man is interested in you or not, especially interested, if he bends down and pulls up his socks.
Right.
Like while talking to you?
Like you're having a conversation, and you just kind of reach down and pull up your socks.
Yeah.
I'm like, that sounds insane.
It does.
But she said it is one of those things that has been tried and tested.
So as a woman, like, you know a guy likes you if he's adjusting his socks.
If he pulls yeah. up his socks.
Wow.
That, it's funny you say that because I was on a task force, the tax-exempt governmental entities, IRS advisory. Anyway, there was a CPA female that was with us. And we just got on a taxi. We had to run and get a taxi. I was pulling up my socks. She said, "Oh, you must really like me." I said, "No, I really got cheap socks."
Yeah. The elastic's worn out.
Exactly. I had on some old socks. And so every time I see her, I said, "Kathy, should I pull up my socks?"
Yeah.
Give me a
hint. But she knew what it meant.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, she had read the book.
On that book,
yeah.
You can sit in a bar and see it played out. And ladies are much better than guys at reading it. One other quick thing. If you want to keep somebody talking, the best thing you can do is just nod your head. Don't say anything. Mm-hmm. Just nod your head. I had a friend of mine had a serious, serious problem. There was no answer. I wanted to go to lunch and get my opinion. I love to talk. I bet you I talk 3 minutes, 5 minutes out of an hour. And most of that was repeating his last comment mm-hmm. or his last question. And all I did was shake my head. We got through with lunch. He said, Colin, that's the best discussion I've ever had on this. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate it. And it allowed him to verbalize his problems, mm-hmm. how he was going to approach it, what it was. And I gave him no real advice, except I listened.
That's right. But you recognize that that's what it called for at that moment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. by nodding the head.
And listening and having him talk. Then at the end, he thought, wow, this was a great conversation. Yeah. Well, that could really help as a talk show host as right?
Well, you do it well. You've been doing it all the whole time.
Yeah. And sometimes you're right. Just being quiet and letting the other person talk is certainly empowering, you know, as well, because you get to get off your chest what you want to be heard. So that's fantastic. So again, how can folks get in touch with you? LinkedIn, website, email, anything like that?
I am on LinkedIn. It's Jones and Cobb. It's pronounced C-O-B-B. It's spelled K-O-L-B. I'm a CPA in Atlanta. Email is my initials, CEB@JonesCobb.com. I've been there 31 years. I've been in business, been in accounting for 45 years.
Wow.
Having fun.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to more great things from you. If there's any new advancements or understandings in the body language arena, come back and share your stories with us. We'd love to hear
it. We've got more. We'll just
good.
Decide what we want
fantastic.
To
so thanks, Bonnie, for making all this happen and bringing Colin in the studio today.
Oh, happy to.
Yeah, remind our listeners again how they can find out more about you and your services.
Go check us out at bbrmarketing.com. We're all over social media with the same name. So we are pretty easy to find. Just do some Googling. We're out there.
Yes. And if your company's out there doing something interesting to genuinely serve your market, your community, and your profession, reach out to us directly on the contact page at Business Radio X and pitch us your story. Thank you to Stone Payton and Lee Cantor. And on behalf of the entire Business Radio X network, I'm Ryan Redhawk McPherson. We will see you next time on the radio.